You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
I don't think anyone should think this is a license to continue to breach copyright. iiNet is not responsible for stopping it.
There's no real demand for censorship of the internet in Australia. There's no other country in the Western world, at least, that's trying anything like this.
Netflix aren't better at anything, but we think we've got something, and we call it the iPad.
And today, we're delighted to be present at the creation of digital radio in Australia.
Senator Conroy is completely botching the implementation of this filtering policy of his.
For adults who want to be able to watch the other material, we're not proposing to do that.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McComb, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio, our 294th edition, as we head closer to the big 300. There's an old saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, which, as most techie types know, is very true for anything to do with computers, and something that I was reminded of last week as I upgraded my iiNet plan to take advantage of the new competition in the broadband marketplace. With Telstra's aggressive retail push in the broadband market 2 weeks ago, ISPs big and small have been rejigging their ADSL offerings to try and match the incumbents. iiNet, TPG and AAPT are just to name a few. Anyway, being an iiNet customer, on the 20th of August, the day the new plans became available, I upgraded my business plan to take advantage 4 times the extra bandwidth allowance for the same price. Logging onto iiNet's webpage and upgrading was the easiest part of the day's work. It's what happened in the hours after that that became increasingly trying. The new allowances were applied instantly, which I thought was impressive, but all connectivity ceased about half an hour after the upgrade. After going through the is it me or is it them fault finding, I came to the conclusion it was iiNet's problem and jumped on the phone to business support. iiNet support has always been pretty good, as I managed to speak to a Western Australian within a few moments after wrestling with their IVR and being bombarded with propaganda. "We've been inundated with plan changes," came the reply from the first line of tech support defence. "I was told that there were some problems with authentication with the new plans, and it wouldn't be long before I could reconnect." 4 hours later, we were back online, just a tad too long for some businesses to be offline. The problems didn't end there. The IP address had become dynamic, not static. This causes all sorts of problems for clients trying to connect to the server. So 6 p.m. on Friday, Western Australian time, I jumped on the phone to support once again. And to my disappointment and frustration, iiNet could or would only support residential customers after hours. How infuriating! Businesses don't stop after hours. In fact, that's the time when most systems work the hardest, doing off-site backups and the likes. According to Whirlpool, an independent website which helps consumers choose an internet service provider, the top 5 companies of choice are Internode, iiNet, TPG, Telstra Big Pond, and OptusNet. Businesses pay a premium for their services over residential customers, supposedly for a better support deal. Makes you wonder, though, if all ISPs treat business support the same. The lack of support from iiNet certainly came as a surprise. And wouldn't you think the technology for businesses and consumers is all the same?
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Australia has had its first hung parliament since World War II. Adam Turner informs us that 7HD is going the way of ABC and 10HD. Have you ever ordered takeaway and had it delivered without using the phone? Well, we'll tell you how to do it with a new Melbourne web-based service. iiNet falls over with a surge of plan changes, and Optus seeks a court ruling on the meaning of the word unlimited. First up, though, here's the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Australia's hung parliament and what this means for our technology landscape. Intel Corporation will buy McAfee for $8.5 billion Australian dollars. Optus announces plans to launch an ADSL comparable satellite service. iiNet launches new terabyte plans to lure customers away from an anti-competitive Telstra. And Australia's YouTube golden girl, Natalie Tran, has made $100,000 US dollars just from Google banner ads. Welcome to Tech Talk News. For the first time since the Second World War, Australia has a hung parliament. In a nail-biting election count on Saturday evening, both Prime Minister Julia Gillard and the opposition leader Tony Abbott made clear to the Australian people that they would both try to form a minority government with support from independents. Neither leader has yet conceded the election, and at the time of writing this week's Tech Talk News, both leaders are still seeking to become Prime Minister of Australia. The result depends largely on which party finishes with the most seats, and this still remains uncertain. According to The Australian, the best assessment is a Liberal National Party coalition holding 73 seats, ahead of Labor with 72 seats. A record number of pre-poll and postal votes have yet to be counted, meaning a final result might not be known until the end of this week. A 76-seat majority is needed to form a government, and that will most likely be constructed by a negotiated arrangement with independents. The implications for Australia's information technology future are still unclear. ZDNet reports that technology policies such as the National Broadband Network and spending on e-health hang in the balance. Although IT Wire says that while the Greens will hold the balance of power in the Senate, the first and most obvious conclusion is that Senator Conroy's proposed net filter is dead, while the rollout of the National Broadband Network will probably proceed. This would be a win-win situation for many Australians who feared that a Labor re-election would mean the introduction of the controversial net filter, or that the formation of a coalition government would mean the scrapping of the estimated $43 billion fibre-to-the-home NBN. With three rural-based independents, along with Australia's first ever Greens member, commentators say that the House of Representatives will probably be forced to support the NBN in a form close enough to that which currently exists. To other news this week, Intel Corporation has announced its intention to buy well-known internet security firm McAfee for $7.68 billion US dollars. In a statement last week, Intel said it had entered into a definitive agreement to purchase all of McAfee's common stock at $48 per share. Directors of Intel and McAfee have approved the deal, which still is subject to approval from regulatory authorities. McAfee will operate as a wholly owned subsidiary of Intel Corporation and report to Intel Software and Services Group. Intel said that the acquisition of McAfee enables a combination of security software and hardware from one company to ultimately better protect consumers, corporations, and governments, as billions of devices and the server and cloud networks that manage them all go online. Optus has announced the imminent launch of an ADSL-comparable satellite service, which will provide speeds of up to 6 megabits per second download and 1 megabit per second upload to remote and rural Australian businesses. The service will be launched within the next 2 weeks and will be available to consumers from around $200 per month for 30 gigabytes of data. The OPS, or Optus Premium Satellite Service, will provide national satellite coverage and is being targeted at large businesses in the construction and mining sectors. Perth-based internet service provider iiNet has announced the launch of a new 1TB ADSL plan and increased existing customers' data allowance at no extra charge. In a media release published on Wednesday last week, iiNet's Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Michael Malone, said that the launch of the terabyte plan was a further demonstration of iiNet's drive to lead innovation in the Australian telecommunications market. Mr. Malone said the new plans, with increased quotas, were in response to Australians' increasing appetite for fast broadband and online content, including live and catch-up television, music, online gaming, and much more. Mr. Malone said average usage had been increasing 20 to 30% each year, and that these new plans recognise that growth and iiNet's customer needs. iiNet is one of the few ISPs that has built its own ADSL infrastructure, which is independent of Telstra's backhaul network. In response to an inquiry from IT News last week in relation to allegations of anti-competitive behaviour by Telstra, iiNet's Mr. Malone said that he was confident of iiNet's ability to beat Telstra in a fair fight, but that in his opinion, Telstra was misusing their market power in wholesale ADSL to give themselves an unfair advantage in retail. And Natalie Tran, described as Australia's own YouTube golden girl, has made more than $100,000 just by making observational video clips and posting them on YouTube. Tran has made her fortune from banner advertising, and $100,000 is a conservative estimate, according to Sydney Morning Herald's Digital Life. By netting more than 276 million views, Tran's YouTube channel has earned her a place in the top 10 independent YouTube stars to have made more than $100,000 on the video sharing website. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
I'm excited.
Are you?
Yes.
It's the last week, isn't it?
Well, quite frankly, it's in Telstra's interest not to improve things. say, what? You need glasses.
One for the left eye, one for the right eye.
Well, they've taken a very long time.
So we'll never see Home and Away broadcast every week in 3D. That just isn't going to happen.
The one issue that most death grip coverage has ignored is that of data speed.
Let's not put all our eggs in fibre in case something faster than light comes along.
Yeah, well, you never know.
I'm going to lose it, Kerry, because I'm not a tech head.
It will consign Australia to the digital dark ages.
This is a new experience, agreeing with
Senator Conroy. It's hard, isn't it?
We can't go beyond this appalling fraud ban that we have here.
I end up trying to get it to look up things by saying... Oomph.
It did sound like Chewbacca then for a brief moment in time.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. On Tech Talk Radio.
Very good evening, everybody. Welcome to the post-election edition of Tech Talk Radio. And where are we now? What do we know? Anything different from where we were this time a couple of hours ago, a couple of days ago? Good evening, Graham. Welcome to the Tech Talk studio. It's just you and me tonight.
Good evening, Andrew. Yes, the rest of them have all found other things to do.
Ah, well, you know.
They're still in shock from the hung parliament result.
What did you make of all of that? It was a very interesting evening on Twitter. If you're watching Adam Turner's tweets, they got more slurred as the night went on. But other than that, and so did, I think, Dr. Ron's too.
Yeah, what? Yes. Well, there was a lot of commentary going around on Twitter. There was a lot of uncertainty. There was a lot of excitement at a certain Liberal function party, if you noticed on the telly, and a lot of empty space on a certain Labor Party function.
Wasn't there?
That was an interesting...
What did you think of the youngest... member of Parliament, the 20-year-old Wyatt Roy, I think his name was, 20, out of Brisbane, out of Queensland.
Hello. I must admit, I didn't actually see his being interviewed.
Didn't you? Oh, it was very funny. His mum and dad let him stay up late that night just in case, because he won his seat in Parliament. So
I must admit, one of my favourite election day activities is stirring up the how to vote people on the way into the polling booth.
Oh, you're not one of those people, are you? What did you do?
Oh well, the Greens candidate where I am is a young bloke who looks like he's about 15.
Oh, he looks like a goth. Is that the guy?
Yeah, well, I look like a girl.
Okay, maybe a different person. Yeah, you're in a different lecture to me, yeah.
Possibly.
What'd you do to him or her?
Oh, no, I just said, no, couldn't bring myself to vote for your 15-year-old, I'm sorry.
Oh, well, 20-year-old got in Queensland, maybe you should go with the times, Graham.
Mm, green candidate got in Melbourne, would you believe?
Look,
that's,
I think,
extraordinary.
It's a turn for the worm, really, isn't it? I think Australians in general are a little bit dissatisfied with a lot of what the major offerings are, and I think the major parties have potentially lost sight in... You know,
yeah. Well,
where they want to take us. Like, I had a discussion over the weekend. There were only two long-term prospective offerings, and that was the ETS, the trading, the carbon trading system, mm-hmm. which fell by the wayside, and the broadband, which was going to future-proof us towards, the next 100 years. And even still, they're the only two long-term sort of policies.
Big long-term programs. Yeah.
Everything else was short-term to get these guys re-elected, and I think they're losing focus. They just want to get re-elected. It's a job, after all.
So looking at the overall swings against Labor, 5.3%. To the coalition, though, only 1.8%. The rest went to the Greens, with a swing to them of 3.7%. That says something, doesn't it?
And there's only one thing about that we can say certainly about this election, and that is that there's more uncertainty.
That's right.
It's certainly opening up an interesting sort of legal ramification, I guess, too, in Australian politics, because I can't remember. I wasn't alive the last time we had a hung parliament. What is
no,
it?
No. Well, certainly not at a federal level. There's been a few around at state level in various parts of the country. But, it's going to be a...
Goodness me.
Interesting times, no doubt.
Well, it seems that we've got three independents, potentially, and at our Greens...
Don't speak too soon, because one of those three looks like he might not be there. Andrew Wilkie in the...
Oh, they had a recount, did they? Is this the seat
This is the seat in Hobart.
Oh.
He's sort of the third of the three independents.
I wonder if you're going to call them amigos.
And it now looks like that seat may be going to the ALP.
Oh, wow. Really?
So,
if you're listening to us on a podcast, just disregard everything
This could all change by the time you hear it, yes.
Absolutely. But, it was one of the things about putting the show together over the weekend, trying to steer clear of...
Well, Dr. Ron was saying he left recording the news until as late as he could, so, yeah.
It was one of those things.
But
so what's going to happen to our NBN? What's going to happen to internet and broadband in this country? Because, Yeah.
Well, if the ABC's election, the ABC's election website, by the way, in fact, magnificent results.
Congratulations, ABC. I must admit, they did a
yet again stunning, very, very well done.
Stunning website, and they backed it up. Anthony Green's statistics were good.
Yeah.
You could tell at 2 o'clock in the morning when Anthony Green went home, that was the time to go to bed. He said,
yeah.
Nothing else is going to happen tonight. I'm going home.
So thanks to the ABC for all the great...
How about the interactive maps?
The interactive map showing the electorates as they were, as they are. It'll show you which seats have changed.
I sent out a tweet for that. Got retweeted all over the place because it was just absolutely stunning.
It's a fantastically good use of... It's based on Google Maps, but they've put their own overlays over the top of it. Works brilliantly. Nice and easy to use.
Oh, it's a perfect example of what you can do with Google Maps.
See? Absolutely.
Yeah. And yes. Anyway, but no, and the website was just fantastic. But I must admit, I did notice that there are a few discrepancies between the Australian Electoral Commission website and the ABC website. So I don't know who was on delay or who was getting numbers at one particular point in time. But I guess now it's all evened up a bit now.
I was kind of using the two websites for different things, so to look at different types of numbers. So I possibly didn't notice that so much. But
Conroy got back in.
Yeah.
Sorry. Moving right along.
Now, looking at what's likely to happen, we've got probably 72 seats each of the major parties now.
Yeah.
With a requirement of you need 76 votes to pass something in the lower house. So either party is going to need support of the independents and the minor parties.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've got in that independent field, we've got Bob Catter in
Queensland.
Outback Queensland.
Did you see his ads on the Chaser? They ran them.
Did they?
Funny ads.
I
go
bet.
Bob.
I can imagine.
Out there with a cow dip.
Now he's a former National Party.
Yes.
So you'd imagine that he'd be leaning towards the coalition, but all his policies are closer to the Gillard government than they are to Abbott's.
Yeah, and he got Barnaby Joyce's nose out of joint the other day too.
Did he?
Oh, they don't see eye to eye, those two.
So Bob Catter, in fact, has specifically said he'd work with the Greens in a hung parliament.
Mm-hmm.
He's named broadband as being one of his big issues.
They all have, actually.
They all have, which is really great. He's
but whose
he's said some
solution are they
things.
Going to choose is the question.
Well, he's got. He's been quoted as saying that a privatised NBN will not work, and that, and I quote, "privatised Telstra has been absolutely disastrous for rural Australia," and that therefore he's absolutely opposed to a privatised national broadband network.
Well, that's my argument all along, because if you look at what they were saying, the coalition was saying that let's use businesses, let's use Telstra and other organisations that are already out there to roll out broadband. Well, it's 20
that's,
years.
That's great for the profitable areas. That's not...
Oh, yeah, they can cherry pick to their heart's content. But let's face it, it hasn't. In the past 10, 15, 20 years, it's still an unlevel playing field.
That's right. So if you're going to get decent services outside of the highly profitable areas, you're going to need a nationalised solution. And this is Bob Catter's position, and he's going to be in a position to have some influence in whatever shape the new parliament's going to be in. The other bloke is... Pardon me, Tony Windsor in the seat of New England, which is...
it's northern New South Wales, isn't it?
Northern New South Wales, or West Country New South Wales. And he's also said that broadband will be a key issue. I haven't seen him say much about the detail of that, but again, he's very, very much a representative for the bush, for country Australia. So he'll be very interested in making sure that they don't get left out of whatever solution goes on. You've got the new member for Lynn, Rob Oakeshott.
Yeah, he was the last gentleman of the three.
And he's...
Well, you got to look, too, also the fact that whether the NBN actually cost anyone any seats or whether they won people seats, too.
Mm.
You know, voters in seats named as first and second release sites for Australia's national broadband network, for example, appear to have focused on the issues beyond the NBN during the 2010 election. And in those seats, the AOP gaining additional votes in only a handful of these electorates.
Yeah.
So maybe because those seats in Tassie already had the NBN connected, they've gone, oh, we've got it, moving on.
Maybe. Yeah. It's, yep.
And of course,
it's very hard to tease out individual issues, though, in individual seats.
You look at regional Australia, which is a very, very big place, and those people who live in that remote area obviously are crying out for good broadband. Now, you've got the choice of the incumbent's policy or the coalition's policy, and well, that was a big decision, but I don't know whether it made a huge difference in a lot of respects. People may be just a bit blasé about it.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it would have made a big difference to the overall voting pattern, but it is interesting that all of these independents who are going to end up with a balance of power have all flagged broadband as being a key issue for them.
Oh, here we go. In Tasmania, by contrast, this is where the NBN already is and working and connected. The ALP made significant gains in four of the five first release sites, with a fifth seat hanging in the balance. The ALP's gains were most pronounced in the three towns, Midway Point, Scottsdale and Smithton, that are already connected to the NBN. So there you go. In Tassie,
so they're connected and they like it.
They're connected and they can see the possibilities of it. So there you go. Go Tassie. And hence the reason why they've obviously made some gains down there.
Yeah. Now, obviously, other people who are going to be playing a key role. We've got the first ever Greens member in the lower house.
And he's pro broadband.
He's a member for Australia. Again, very, very much pro the NBN.
And you've got to remember the Greens preferences went to the ALP in our two-party preferred system.
For the most part, yes. And there's also another funny seat out in Western Australia, the seat of O'Connor, where there's a Nationals Party MP who is not is saying he's not committed to the coalition, so his vote in the final balance of Parliament may be up for grabs as well by negotiation. So he may well support a Labor. He may be able to be convinced to support a Labor minority government as well.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. We've moved into this land of no man's land, really, haven't we, at the moment? We've got to see what happens between this edition of Tech Talk Radio and the next edition, and hopefully things might be a tad clearer by the time that comes around. It may not be. That's the joys of politics. We could all be going back to the polls again.
Well, that's certainly one possibility that, yes, if neither side can form a government, then we'll have to have another election.
Yes, if our Lady Governor-General chooses that it's not going to work, it's untenable, she'll send us all back to the polls. Maybe we could do double dip down here in Victoria because we've got the the state election coming up. Maybe we could do both together. Save us going out again on the weekend. Wouldn't that be good?
That'd cause mass confusion.
Oh, it certainly would, but it'd be great, wouldn't it? You could really give those how-to-vote people a run for their money when you're at the polling booth next time they're great.
Now, I don't know whether you've picked up on the Governor-General's got her own little crisis going on as well, of course.
Really?
Have you come across this?
Tell.
Well, people have raised the question that the Governor-General, Quentin Bryce, her daughter Chloe is married to Bill Shorten.
Oh, is this the insider trading bit that they were talking about?
Yeah.
Conflict of interests.
Yeah, so her daughter is married to one of the members of the Labor Party. So who's in the seat of, I can't remember which seat he's in now.
Oh, that's all right. I don't think it's a vital issue, but yes, I can see the conflict of interest there.
So there's lots of questions being raised there. So the Governor-General's position herself may be very awkward in the coming days.
Mm. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio, post-election edition. You can come and say hello to us at chat.techtalkradio.com.au. We've got all of our regulars in there. Good evening to them all. You might have heard the phone make a funny noise here in the studio before. I'm sorry about that, but it was actually Dr. Ron saying...
Have you not... This is your new phone. You still haven't figured out how to put it on silent.
I have figured out. I just forgot. Dr. Ron is listening to us on the stream tonight on his Android-based system.
Oh, it says, fantastic.
Furious on the Android. So... yes, anyway, very good evening to Dr. Ron. And JD, who's our regular Apple guru coming in, apparently he had a better offer with a board meeting or something. You have to attend those, I think, especially in his line of business. So,
yes.
and so here we are. And anyway, this evening on tonight's show, we're also going to be talking about ordering food online. At last, a website that seems to actually cut it. Anyway, won't give too much out of the bag. Tim Sincotta, I believe, will be in later on this evening to tell us a little bit about that. All going according to plan. And yes, the Android device, I've been warming to it, Graham, the new HTC. We've got some Coro too, but I'll get to that shortly because Dr. Ron's not here this evening. Because he normally does the Coro and stuff like that.
He's thrown the whole routine out by not showing up, hasn't he? He should be ashamed of himself. So you used to have an iPhone, now you've moved to the HTC Desire.
That's the one.
Running Android Froyo.
2.2, Froyo, yes. And there's some fantastic applications out there for it.
You're showing me some really good tech head applications, NetMap and...
Ah, yeah, they're my sort of applications. You won't find
very,
them...
Very, very tech head applications,
won't find any of them in any app store, let me tell you. look, for those who have no idea what we're talking about, a lot of smartphones on the market these days, you can choose between the ubiquitous iPhone, which is pretty much everywhere. Although when I was in the States recently, the BlackBerry seemed to be the biggest and best out there in the US.
Yeah, so it's only a halfway smartphone, though, the BlackBerry.
Yeah, it is only a halfway smartphone. And, of course, the upcoming competition to the iPhone is definitely the Android platform, the HTC devices. And
Android's not exclusive to HTC, of course. Android is Google's operating system that they've released, and it's available on a range of different hardware. Someone was showing me their brand new, I think it was a Samsung smartphone running Android. So they were really, really pleased with their new Samsung phone.
Great. If you've got some good apps for either platform, send them. Just shoot them through on the chat. Marky Marks just sent one through. Tram Hunter on the Android is pretty good, I must admit. We have trams in Melbourne. Those awful things. Apparently they draw tourists. I'm not too sure about that. In Melbourne, they just slow the traffic down.
A seriously abbreviated train, but it runs down the middle of the road.
And makes a lot of noise electronically as it goes past. It jams out all radio
signals.
Yeah. But anyway, those...
Ding, ding.
Yeah, Marky Mark's saying the Tram Hunter's not a bad app. Well, yeah, there's some terrific things out there. And especially, I guess, the way I've sort of, in the last few weeks, the iPhone is... This is my opinion. The iPhone is to, I guess, uses what the Mac is. You know, it just works. You plug it in, you download it, you get an app, and it just works.
But it's also very much pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. It's, don't look at how it works. Don't try and get into the technical side of it. Just accept what it does and live with what it doesn't.
And those who don't like that tend to jailbreak them because they want to tinker with them and play with them and do things like that.
And that has mixed successes and has its good points and bad points.
Well, I must admit that the iPhone that I had the 3GS. I still do. I still use it because there are a couple of applications on it that I just really like. And I haven't found a substitute for yet on the Android marketplace. But having said that, there is a substitute for nearly everything out there.
Right.
So you just got to have a bit of a look and a bit of a see, and you might find stuff. But as I was alluding to before, the iPhone is like the Mac, and the Droid is like the PC. For people who like looking underneath the hood and having a tinker and a play and want techie apps and stuff like that, and who aren't afraid to push the envelope of the new technology, then the Droid is for you. And especially with a handset like the HTC Desire, which has got one of the fastest processors on the market out there, it just works, and it works really, really well. There are only I'd preface that with only one comment, is that there's two versions of the Desire out there. One is an international version, and one is an Australian version. The Australian version is sold by Telstra and is basically tattooed, branded, lassoed, crippled to the Telstra network, which is good if you're a Telstra customer, don't get me wrong. But if you want to actually get one which is a non-branded Telstra device, then you get the international version, and it doesn't perform as well on the Telstra network as what the Telstra one does. It's a special one for
because
Telstra.
Because it's got a slight difference in the way it handles the different channels, different frequencies.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. So that's it. Without getting too techie, that's really the differences in the hardware. So and the Android market is amazing. There's plenty out there to go and have a look at, and there's a lot of free apps like there is on the iTunes store. There's a lot of free things you can go and download and have a bit of a play. Now, Graham, I've noticed you've been using one of the old faithful type sort of phones. You've had no inkling to go to a smartphone just yet?
Well, I've had the inkling. I just haven't had that tip over the edge just yet. A while back, I was really looking forward to the iPhone 4 coming out. I was thinking that was going to be a really interesting new device.
Adam's gone down that path. He got two for the family.
And but then it came out, and there was all this debate about antennas and stuff. And yes, I know the antenna issue has been way overblown, and it's really not as much of an issue as people have made it to be. But it's just taken the shine off the device for me, and that combined with a few other things, I've started to realise that the limitations of the iPhone. So, been also thinking about the Android device, but again, that I'm a dedicated Telstra user, so I've now, as you said, I've got the choice of getting the Telstra phone with all the extra Telstra apps on it, and I've seen one of these phones in action that's got the Telstra stuff on it, and it really is intrusive, and you can't uninstall some of them, which is just very frustrating. And if you try to use your own email solution and you don't want to use the Big Pond My Email, whatever it's called, it still pops up all the time asking if you want to use it.
And that's why I bought the international one, because I needed the flexibility to chop and change with different... Like, you know, I run my own business. I have an Exchange server at work where I can get my calendars and things like that. The device works beautifully with any Google product, strangely enough. So,
yeah, well, that's the way. And, of course... my business situation has been changing as well, and I'm now using Google apps for all my business stuff, for the Google Calendar and the Google Mail and so on.
Yep.
So that's definitely pushing me towards the Android, but of course with the Telstra stuff on it getting in the way, that's going to be frustrating.
Warlock says he uses an app called TripView for the iPhone to do trains, buses and ferries. Apparently that one's coming to the Android as well. Yeah, and that's the point, isn't it, Warlock? They are all sort of slowly migrating across to the different platforms. For example, there's a Commonwealth Bank application, which works really, really well on the iPhone, but it's sadly lacking some of the features, the automated features. And I'll give you the example for that. They've got a ATM locator device where you can push the button, the GPS knows where you are, and it says your nearest ATM is at this servo or this location.
That would be very handy.
It is very handy. It works really, really well on the iPhone, but in the Droid market, they've got the provision for it, and it even says you can find it if you download the iPhone app, but it's not going to work on your Android-based device. So the little things like that that are shortcoming, but it's just a matter of time. And I think as developers get out there and start playing in that market space, you're not limited to, like with developing in the iPhone market, to sell your wares through. And, well, you know the story, don't you? The drum is that it all has to go through App Store.
Well, it has to be approved
and sanctioned and
yeah,
stuff like
which
that.
Yeah, which is,
And the App Store...
really gets up some people's nose,
The Droid market isn't quite as, should we say, locked down, or maybe a little bit more flexibility or something like that compared to the iPhone. But, yeah, look, it's good. It's new technology. It's a lot of fun, and it does certainly show up what networks work best and what are a little bit sluggish.
They're making fun of me in the chat for being indecisive and telling me to just go ahead and do it, so...
Are they? What are they saying? I can't say that. Our listeners are not indecisive listeners, so maybe they've got a point there, Dr. Graham. Oh, there's a lot of people in there tonight. I just had another look.
Right up there.
Hello. Yeah, chat.techtalkradio.com.au is if you'd like to come and join us, and we'd love to have you there just quietly.
Listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Did you know that the Australian Taxation Office got problems with their tax returns at the moment?
They're still having problems with their new computer upgrade.
There's someone here in our studio who's very, well, in part of our radio station in 3WBC in Melbourne, who's very near and dear to these sort of problems. And, yeah, they've got the computer. Well, when you think about it, it must be a huge IT dilemma running an organisation like that.
I'm sure.
But the Australian Taxation Office has failed to meet its 14-day processing target for almost one in four individual tax returns lodged online. See, that's the hook, isn't it? You lodge it online, you get it back quick. Not this time around. Well, not unless you're one of those one in four. And yes, anyway, so if you are one of those four, well, yeah, it's coming. The check's in the mail.
I must do my tax one day.
Oh, Graham. Anyway, the delays were due to the ATO having to smooth out its processes rather than any significant technical errors stemming from recently implemented IT systems. And they have basically apologised. So it's bureaucratic thing, really.
They were in the news several weeks ago because due to a glitch in their computer systems, they sent out notices to a huge number of people that were supposed to have checks attached, but didn't have any checks attached.
Is that the equivalent of sending out an email without the attachment? That would be embarrassing, wouldn't it?
It was very.
Oh, well, there you go. All right, in other news this week, have you seen all the big plans that have come out by all the ISPs? You know, Telstra 2 weeks ago did the big gazump and dropped their pricing for their big plan as well.
Got everybody's nose out of joint, yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, TPG, iiNet, and a few others have all sort of come to the party and had an interesting scenario with iiNet. I decided to change plan on the day that they came out. You should never do that, I've come to the conclusion. it's just they were inundated because the plans basically have quadrupled allowances from the last sort of, how would you say, they were pretty good allowances. I wasn't going to use another word, but I won't. But they were reasonable allowances, like 100 gig thereabouts.
That's a lot.
Yeah, which wasn't bad for like $100. But now they've quadrupled that. So, and of course, everyone's now gone
400 gig.
Yes, 200 off peak and 200 on peak and things like that. Fantastic. But you can now get 500 off peak and 500 peak, which is just amazing. It's just born to, we won't go into great details, but you'll know what you're going to do with a lot of bandwidth. You tend to use it each and every time you hit it, that limit, that is. But people like or some of the ISPs in particular are saying, use it more on your iViews and things like that, so which was not needed anyway on iiNet. I don't know what it's like on some of the others. You're a TPG person, aren't you?
Yeah.
They've got big plans too, didn't they? Have you taken advantage of those new ones?
I changed plans not all that long ago in the hope of getting a slightly better deal. And, I've actually been looking at moving to one of the other ISPs. But, yeah, this new round of pricing might move me further in that direction.
What was the reasoning for shopping around? You don't have to say.
To go for a better designed network, TPG's network has some less than ideal things about it, which obviously helps them to achieve very, very low prices and very, very high allowances for low prices. But things like being always forced to go through their transparent proxies is just really annoying.
Oh, okay.
So,
Well, there is. I'm a firm believer that you do actually get what you pay for in a lot of respects like that. So, and the reason why I chose iiNet for my stuff, I would have either iiNet or Internode. I've used them both. I've been customers in them both, and they have their own gear, and I really like that. I think that's terrific.
Well, Internode, from a technical point of view, have a fantastic reputation.
Simon Hackett, he's brilliant.
Yeah. So certainly,
a tech guy running a tech company, can't go wrong, can you?
Yeah, that would put Internode right at the top of my list of where I would go to. The only reason I'm not with Internode is for pricing. That's definitely the direction I'm looking.
Well, TPG have, who I think are in the top five on Whirlpool, which is Australia's probably foremost site for finding out where you should go and who you should sign up with. If you look at what their deal is, TPG, 1 terabyte, 500 off peak and 500 on, that's gigabytes, that is, bringing that 1 terabyte, for $70. So that's their offering. You look at iiNet's offering, the same is $99.95, so $100. And you look at iPrimus, which is 1.11 terabytes, which is 511 gig in peak. I don't know how they came to that number, and 600 off peak. You're looking at that $100 limit. So I guess it's budgetary. It's also, what you actually want from a service provider. And I must admit, we do a lot of off-site backups at the office, as you know, and let me tell you, it's all been configured to happen in those off-peak time slots. So maybe that's the whole idea behind it. The network slows down in those wee small hours of the morning, so let's crank up the BitTorrents and the off-site backups.
I guess so, yeah.
All right, so there you go. If you haven't signed up for them already, just be wary of the devil in the deep blue sea there, because everyone else is signing up for them, and the changeover has been not interesting, but it certainly hasn't been without issues. I was a bit upset to find out that if as a business customer, if you ring iiNet on the dot of 6 o'clock local time, they say no, call back Monday. That I wasn't happy with that.
That's a long time for a network to be down. Yeah.
Not happy, Jan, on that one. Mm. So. Anyway.
Did you get any result at all? Were you able to get something done, or did you really have to wait till Monday?
I really had to wait till Monday. Ugh. Very disappointing.
Mm.
And isn't that why you pay the premium, in a lot of respects, but for being a business customer to being a residential customer?
That would be a deal breaker that for me in a business situation.
I did tweet that to the world when I was trying to do it. I did get one response back, not from iiNet, because I did tweet it at iiNet. But yes, a couple of our Tech Talk listeners did tweet back, sort of. Anyway. we won't go there. So,
so Internode, watch out. New customer coming your way.
No. I'll stick with Ionet. They've still been pretty good. So even today when I rang up and had a good chat to them, they still had huge network issues. And he said, don't upgrade anything for about a week. Just let the bugs iron themselves out a little bit and do all that. But, you know, companies like AAPT, which is Telecom New Zealand, really, has decided to push ahead with an upgrade of AAP's national fibre network too, which will, you know, help the soon-to-be wholesale and business-only carrier compete in the NBN world. So it's going to be interesting. There's so much happening in this marketplace at the moment. Where it's going to end up with election results, with the
fate of the NBN still hanging in the balance. You know, where is it going to end up?
Anyway, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Adam Turner, we're going to talk about Seven. Mate, have you heard about this?
No, but I'm looking forward to it.
No, won't give Dr. Ron any more promo ammunition anyway. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Remember when Tech Talk Radio first hit the airwaves some 5-odd years ago? Listeners could ring up and say their bit. Remember that? Well, it's back.
The Tech Talk Radio feedback line has risen from the ashes. So if you have a comment, criticism, correction, or you just plain want to get it off your chest, then start dialing 03-8682-8836. The Tech Talk Radio feedback line is your direct line to being heard by millions of Tech Talk listeners around the planet. So get dialing 03-8682-8836. That's 03-8682-8836. Call now.
But we've run out of steak knives.
Android-powered, flash-enabled devices. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, the thing might end up costing a little bit more, working a whole lot better, and being a whole lot more future-proof.
And there's an LED backlight as well.
There's a humdinger. Rip-schnorter.
It's a Perlaterra.
Are they selling well on eBay?
Oh, yes.
Not that type of guy.
You sound disappointed, Graham.
Entertaining.
Now, I'd like to introduce a conspiracy theory at this point in time because...
Oh, good.
Informative.
We've got another case here of a complete and utter lack of perspective. Connected.
Independent.
No, the couch is unbleepable.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Unbleepable.
It is unbelievable, you're right.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
That you are. Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb and Graham Callaghan in this evening.
Yes.
And we've got Tim coming in very shortly. And Will, we're going to talk about a new website where you can order your food online, especially if you're in Melbourne. If you're a bit further afield, if you're listening to us and you're in Cairns or...
Well, we'll have to find out
if
and when the technology is going to roll out.
Yeah, but nonetheless, really good idea, I think. Well, anyway, we'll find out all about it very shortly. Google Australia chief turns to mobiles, according to IT News. Google will have a new managing director for Australia and New Zealand from October after Karim Temsamarin. Oh, I hate those big long names. You know who you are. Left for a position at the search and advertising giant's Californian headquarters in Mountain View. Google said that 200,000 Android power devices were being activated every day too. How about that? 200,000.
That's a lot.
Wonder if Apple are doing anything like that. They probably did when the iPhone came out. They're probably a bit of a spike. But anyway, the platform was gaining traction in Australia as Optus revealed recently. It was discussing with Google its roadmap for the Android just months after introducing the first round of smartphones, including Samsung's Galaxy S device. Now, Adam had one of those in here the other night. And a Google Australia spokesman highlighted its growth under Temsamani and said they hope to announce a replacement for him soon. So there you go. The Android device, 200,000 a day. I wonder if that's just in Australia. I wouldn't think so. That's got to be globally.
Presumably that's global, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, you trek out to Mountain View, you can go and see. I wonder if they've put the Froyo out there in front. You know how out the front of building whatever it is, I can't remember where it is. I have my photo taken out in front of it where they develop all these platforms at Google HQ in Mountain View. You can see, you know, there's a cupcake and a donut and all that
stuff. They have a code name for each version,
they do.
Which is some sort of food.
Froyo. I wonder if they've just chucked frozen yogurt over all the other existing things that they've got out. Someone in California listening, just a lid, drive down, take a photo. I want to see what Froyo is out the front of Google if it's there. So anyway, now two other interesting news this week. Adam Turner's view from the couch. Some rather interesting news this week of what Channel 7 are planning on doing. They're calling something called 7 Mate. Have you heard about this?
No, I haven't.
It's a boy channel.
Is it?
Yes. I wonder if it's like those. We have a community TV station here in Melbourne, Channel 31, which obviously is now digital, so it's everywhere. But I wonder if they've got blokey shows like that going on, 7HD. But are you an HD viewer at all, Graham, yet at home?
Not yet, no. No, I've still got the old standard definition set floating about. So.
Oh, yeah, boxy but good.
And, yeah.
No inkling to change over yet?
No huge drive for it. No. I mean, I've watched HD stuff at some mates' places with where it looks really nice, but
yeah, well, you better get in quick before it all disappears.
It's not all going to disappear. Well, all the HD, yes. Well,
you know what I mean.
Yes, I do know what you mean. There's no one broadcasting any decent shows on HD anymore. They're just broadcasting the news in HD.
Yes, and even then, I think I sent out a tweet also on election night. Didn't the pollies look fantastic in their up-res standard def to high def looking pictures that were on Channel 24.
I don't know. I was watching in a tiny little box on the website.
Were you? Oh, well. There you go. It's a pet argument around the industry at the moment, and certainly one of Adam's pet hates too. So, and here's this week's View from the Couch. You can find out what's going on with Channel 7.
Forget about 9's Channel Go. We've now got 7's 7 Mate. I kid you not. Channel 7's new digital television channel is called 7 Mate. And if you watch the promos, that's actually the way they say it. Yes, this is blokes TV. Footy, chicks, beer, explosion, footy, explosion. Did I mention chicks and beer? That's pretty much what we're looking at from Channel 7. But worst yet, once again, Australian high-def TV owners have been screwed because 7 is ditching the 7HD high-definition channel in order to introduce 7 Mate. 7 plans to launch 7 Mate on Channel 73 in time for the AFL Grand Final in September. The new channel will have, as I said, a very blokey feel, running sport along with shows such as Family Guy, American Dad, Scrubs, and My Name is Earl. 7 Mate will be a high-definition channel, screening the AFL and other programs in HD. As such, the new channel is only available to viewers with a HD tuner in their television, set-top box, or digital recorder. But with Spectrum at a premium, where will Network 7 find the bandwidth to launch a new high-def channel? I spoke to Simon Francis from 7, who told me that the broadcaster intends to ditch his existing high-definition channel 7HD. His quote was, 7 Mate replaces 7HD, as this is all we can fit in our spectrum until 2013 or the end of analog. The quote goes on, it will be broadcast as per 7HD currently, but will appear on Channel 73. On Grand Final Day, 7 Mate will simulcast with 7 and then commence life as its own full-time HD channel. So, programs currently broadcast on 7's Channel 70 in high def will now only be available in standard def on Channel 7, unless they're blokey shows picked up by 7 Mate on 73. This spits in the eye of many Australians who've shelled out good money for digital television equipment. 7 tell me that programs such as Bones, Castle, Criminal Minds, City Homicide, Packed to the Rafters, Covert Affairs, Parenthood, and Home and Away, which currently screen in HD on the HD channel, won't be on 7 Mate. So if these are your favourite stories, stiff. The move by 7 to ditch 7HD comes not long after the ABC abandoned its HD channel in favour of 24-hour news. Last year, the 10 network also ditched 10HD in favour of 1HD, a new 24-hour high-def sports channel. The 9 network is rumoured to be announcing a new channel any day now, which could also come at the expense of 9's existing high-def channel. So where does that leave Australians with big televisions who enjoy the crisper picture of high-definition broadcasts? In the lurch, mate, unless they're huge sports fans. Both 7 and 10 have ensured their major sports broadcasts are simulcast on their HD channels, and 9 could be expected to do the same. Should 9 abandon its HD channel, that would leave SBS as the only major network in Australia with a HD simulcast of its primary channel. This is going to put a serious dent in the WAF of big TV owners everywhere. Every guy who said to the lady of the house, look, get a high-def television. It's not just for me watching sport and explosions and chicks and beer and stuff.
You can watch all your favourite documentaries on the ABC. You can watch all your favourite girly shows on Channel 7. They'll all be in glorious high definition. Well, sorry, mate, but all over now, high def is just all about blokes and sport and news and explosions and beer and mates. And need I go on? I think I've made my point. We're getting screwed. After taking several years to embrace high-definition programming while encouraging viewers to do the same, it seems Australia's major networks are now determined to abandon high-def viewers unless they want to crack open a beer, hang out with their mates, and watch a lot of sport.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Ah, oh, mate. And if you're having a matey time, what else do you do, Graham?
Well, presumably you
beer and pizza, don't you?
You order in a you get to get some beer and you get in a pizza or a curry or something.
Yeah, it's a bit like what we did on election night: beer and pizza. bit of you know, matey television with a few blokes and stuff.
Had a bad experience ordering a pizza on election night.
Why? What happened?
I ordered it online on the insert big pizza company name here website.
Oh yeah.
And
you got what you paid for, did you?
Well, I got the wrong pizza.
Oh, you
well, I
definitely
got the right pizza on the wrong crust, which just annoyed me.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Was it cold?
So, no, it wasn't cold. It was hot. It was
good.
Was otherwise quite good, but yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe
ordered the deep pan crust and got the thin crispy crust.
Did you give it back to him?
Oh, I rang them up and gave them a serve about it.
Did he send you another serve?
No.
Oh dear. Well, what's the use of that? Anyway, if you're that way inclined and you're sitting down and you're watching Channel 7's new mate, which is going to start after the grand final this year, you might want to take note of this site, especially if you're in Melbourne. And if you guys in the chat want to follow along with us, you can. It's www.takeout.com.au, which is basically a place where you can come along and order food online and it gets delivered to your house. So you can go pick it up. And it's on the face value, it looks really good. So we have its creators here in the Tech Talk studio this evening. You're going to hear from Tim Sincotta, who's the marketing director of takeout.com.au, and the self-appointed tech dude, Will Cruss. He's here in the studio to answer all of our tech questions. So please don't order any food for us in the studio tonight, for those in the chat, because I know what you'd be like. yes, we'll work it out. But anyway, Tim, thanks for coming in and having a chat. What led you to develop a website or set up a business, which was probably just a natural extension of the web, really, wasn't it? Why did you do it?
Yeah, look, it's well, thanks for having us. It's funny, in a previous job when I was working in the city, we were sitting around one Friday afternoon looking for a pizza place where we could order.
Do.
Just looking for a menu. And we couldn't find anything simply on the internet except for one of the insert big pizza company here. And
did you get the right? Did you get the right crust?
Generally, doesn't lead you to a really good result. Does
doesn't it? Lead us to a good result. No. So, look, Guy is mates with Will, and I know that Will, our tech dude, is pretty switched onto this sort of stuff. So I went to Will and said, "Well, look, why don't we look at a site where we can find menus?" And Will, being a pretty good tech dude, said, "Well, look, we can extend that to actually ordering." It makes sense. You can buy everything else online nowadays. Why not a pizza or Indian or takeaway in general? So it sort of just built momentum from there. And now, obviously, we're up and running and got up near 200 restaurants in Melbourne on board. So
that's a pretty mean achievement, I would have thought, for 200 restaurants. Like when I first went and had a look at that, oh, yeah, what are we going to have, half a dozen here and a few there? But having a bit of a cruise, like the Tech Talk office is in Hawthorne, and I'm having a bit of a look around there, and of course, eastern suburbs of Melbourne, for those of you listening to us outside of Melbourne, and there's a lot of you, is quite a foodie sort of area, really, and there were a lot there. A lot of curries, as Graham pointed out earlier. Not that there's a problem with curries.
No.
But so tell us about the process. You come to the website, you've got a really simple and easy instructions at the top. One, enter your suburb. Two, browse the restaurants. Three, order food. Four, enjoy your meal. I haven't tried four yet because I haven't got to the part with three, but it's as simple as that, is it?
It's pretty simple. You type in your suburb, as you've just done there. You've typed in Hawthorne and you found a list of suburbs on the site. It's pretty simple to browse along at the different menus available. If you hover over each menu item, you'll get a description of what's in the actual item. You'll get a price there, any special deals that the restaurants have. And as you can see, it's really, really quite easy to put an order together.
Now, these are restaurant menus. Do the restaurateurs update their menus, or is this something...
We do it for them. There's any mistakes, it's on us. What we've essentially done is we've made it easy to get online for restaurants. And, you know, a lot of these guys who own the restaurants, and especially pizza shops, you know, the older guys that are running it, I mean, they don't know how to switch a computer on. So we're taking all... You know, we're putting them online without the need to be... you know, computer savvy or even know how to switch on a computer.
Well, that's good.
That's a big issue for a lot of small businesses is that, you know, they're good at being a pizza shop or an Indian shop or, you know, it might be a flower shop or could be... But they're not necessarily good at IT. They need other people to come in to help with that side
of things. Especially when they make pizzas so well, they don't want to know about computers.
Yeah, exactly. Well, being good at computers is not what they're there for. They're good because they're good at doing something else, so...
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the whole point of it, is to give... give people a choice, as you said. You've got it running so well with the big insert pizza company names here. It's great to give it to small business where they can be a part of a directory, where they can, you know, as you say, concentrate on we'll make good pizzas.
Let somebody else be good at building a good website.
Exactly. And
that's what, yeah.
Now, exactly. Some of these restaurants I'm just looking at here are known to me. Like, they're not obscure little restaurants. So you've obviously got a few reasonable size and reputable restaurants to come on board with this project. The menu, obviously, you click on the left, you choose your restaurant, and then on the right-hand side of the screen comes up with the pricing and all the options. And mm-hmm. It's just a simple matter of choosing your menu. Walk us through what happens next. You choose many, several, are there limitations, or you just...
Yeah, you can
click away.
Yeah, order at one restaurant at a time because the whole order is put together and sent through to the restaurant. So yeah, it's a simple case of once you've if you're ordering a delivery, once you've passed the minimum delivery amount, as you know, most places will have, you know, minimum $15 or $30 or whatever. Once you've hit that, you hit finalize order, and then it'll ask you for your address details. If you have an account set up, you know, it's all there and you just log in. But if you don't have an account set up...
The account's with you or the account's with the restaurant?
With us. With us.
Oh, so that's great. So you can shop around...
Yes.
...and log in with your own username, password or whatever you give them. Is that right?
Yeah, you're essentially a customer of takeout.com.au. Okay.
All right. And there's no hidden fees. I'm just looking here. I'm looking at one restaurant, which it says minimum order $25, delivery fee $3. I guess that's it.
No, it's exactly as what you'd get it from the menu from the restaurant itself. So we make a big point of that.
All right. And obviously, you've got your options of delivery and collection. And I notice if you go to collection, you get a few more options, a few more restaurants. They don't like delivering, obviously. They rather you come get it.
Yeah, look, there's some restaurants that, you know, we set a radius on suburbs from around you, and Will can probably explain better how that's done. But, you know, you might be in Box Hill, but there might be somewhere in Baldwin, I know, just down the road. That people are happy to drive to pick up, and they only do collection, not delivery. So, you know, it's up to you whether or not you want to look at places that do just delivery or places that do delivery just collection.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're talking to Tim Sincotta, Managing Director of Takeout.com, and the self-appointed tech dude, Will Cross. Will, question for you.
Fire away.
How do you know where the delivery range is of a particular restaurant? Like if, Tim was alluding to there, you know if we're outside of their range. Is that right?
Well, certainly with the delivery aspect, the restaurants give us the suburbs that they deliver to. That's one of the reasons why we don't have the ability to enter a postcode at the start, because quite often restaurants will only deliver to half a postcode. So So you put your suburb in, and the restaurants are pretty firm on we'll deliver to this suburb and that suburb. It's more for the collection, the radius thing comes in, so that when the user searches, for example, collections in Hawthorne, they're not getting things in Mordialloc. So it basically uses a Google Maps interface to work out the distance between points and suburbs.
So how does
another great use of Google Maps?
How does your system talk to the restaurant?
Okay. Well, when we accept an order on behalf of the restaurant, we then give the restaurants the ability to choose to have it faxed to them. They get it emailed
faxed
to them.
Fax is a concept.
Or phone to them.
Oh, yeah.
There'll also be GPRS machines coming along soon as well for restaurants, which will just print out little tickets.
Brad on our chat has said, is there an iPhone app coming for this?
There will be an iPhone app coming for it.
What about an Android app? I don't want to be left out here. This sounds really good.
There'll be an iPhone app first, and there'll be an Android app probably after that.
From a marketing point of view, it's better to have an iPhone app first.
Definitely in Australia anyway. But yeah, we're probably looking at 4 to 6 weeks for the iPhone app to be completed. It's well underway. And then I would say probably 8 weeks after that, we're looking at Android and of course Windows as well.
How do you go with a like if we've got an app like that, a mobile app? Yep. I tend to order food on the drive as I'm driving home. I'll pick it up and then continue on. Is that providing a bit of a challenge for, like, if it's looking at where you are when you order, or you, it's, I guess you log in with your account, don't you? So it knows where you are.
Exactly. It knows where you are, and you still have to put in your suburb for what area you want to collect from. So it uses that, not your actual location in your GPS in your phone.
I was thinking that would be really handy, though, sometimes to have it use your actual location, so that if you're working late on some obscure location somewhere, you can find the nearest pizza place to order from.
It certainly would, but you can always look at your phone and work out where you are and chuck in that suburb.
This is fair enough.
This is a question from a man who doesn't have a smartphone yet. So, all right. I guess this is the brain. How long has this been going? What is it, your brainchild, Tim? Is this your idea from those Friday afternoons? Where do we get a pizza from in the city?
I'd like to take credit for it, but the concept of putting together a site for it, I came up to Will with and said, look, what if we put together a site? Well, actually, I went to Will for business advice, but really I wanted to work with him on it. But I went to him to say, well, look, how hard would it be to make an online directory where we put menus online? And Will said, that's pretty easy. Let's challenge ourselves and make an online ordering as well. And that was, I remember it well, grand final day for the NRL last year, so October last year. And obviously it's really kicked on since then and recently launched. So it was a long time in the making, as you can imagine, with the detail of the programming in it. So,
Will, how long have you spent working on this? Sounds like quite a while.
Well, similarly, from that point onwards, basically, we started to get the wheels in motion. We actually used a firm in the UK to produce and develop most of the back end of the website using CodeIgniter. And they already had a framework existing for existing clients they had in Denmark and in the UK. So we basically took their... had a look at what framework they had, said, okay, well, we'll use that framework, but we need to change this, and we really got it working for us.
Right. Now, having worked on it and adjusted it for sort of the Australian way of doing things, what are the prospects of then rolling this out to other areas, to maybe Sydney, Brisbane, even to rural Victoria?
Absolutely. The idea is basically to make sure we have a market dominance in Melbourne, make sure the project's working, people are using it extensively here, and then we'll look towards the other population centres.
Expanding out a bit further.
Sydney, yeah. And Brisbane, Perth, Adelaide.
Fantastic.
One of our chat users says, why does the Android app always come second? I think that's pretty obvious. I think there's...
Tim?
The iPhone app makes us more money.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. See, you know...
It's a very simple business
correct.
Decision, yeah.
So we can pay for the Android app.
So how hard was it to convince restaurateurs to come on board with such a scheme?
Harder than you think.
That's why I'm asking the question, because traditionally they go, oh, we don't like this newfangled technology, Bizzo...
Yeah, look...
It starts drawing them new customers, I would imagine.
Look, when you start showing them the stats on big pizza companies and their online ordering success, in particular one that's doing very well out of it, and you start throwing these stats through and you explain to them, you know, we'll give you the orders, there's no risk involved. I mean, they don't pay unless they get orders. It's pretty simple. You know,
that's a good deal for the business owners, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, look, we've taken all the risk. You know, the business owners... It's cost them nothing to come on. They haven't signed any contracts or anything like that. If they get orders, fantastic.
So they've got nothing to lose then, really, have they, if that's the business model?
Except the time it takes to put the menu together and send it through to you.
Exactly. Well, yeah, even then, when I visit them, I take the menu with me and we go and enter it. So,
right. You know, you're really making it easy for them, aren't you?
We make it as easy as possible. So,
can you go around the corner from my place and see that Chinese shop? Because that's where I like to order from.
Yeah, look, guys, as I said, we're sitting at around 200 restaurants now across Melbourne. We pretty well have every single suburb in Melbourne covered.
Okay. I must have, the few I came up at least came up with a couple of good choices. So the few I typed in before. So
fantastic.
The thing I like about it is that the big insert pizza name here, those big brands aren't in the not that I found them in takeout.com.au, because obviously they've got their own site. So if you're looking for the one around the corner, as you say, Graham, the local, chances are you're going to find it.
But the one around the corner is probably making much better pizzas than that big pizza company. So,
absolutely.
Exactly.
And of course, particularly the one around the corner from you. I love the pizzas from there.
Excellent. And they are there, I've noticed too. Mm. But yeah, you look at some of the big pizza areas like Carlton, for example. Have you got a big uptake in that marketplace, by just out of curiosity? Because that's where you go for a pizza, let's face it. Carlton's the place.
Carlton's a pretty even spread across pizza, Thai, Chinese. If you have a look there, I think you'll find we've got about 3 or 4 pizza places there. With those inner city areas which are heavily populated, we like to have the choice. You know, if you go to your drawer at home and you can find half a dozen menus, great. But if you're in that area and you don't have those half a dozen menus, you know, you can go on the site, and I think in Carlton you'll find at least 10 restaurants to order from.
In Carlton, you can't take 3 steps without finding another great Italian restaurant. So,
well, most of these ones will deliver to your door. So
that's fantastic.
Now, you take care of the store opening hours. So if a store's not open on a Sunday or only the kitchen's open a certain time, you look after all that?
Yeah, look, you can go and you can view the menu, but you can't process an order. You can schedule one for when it opens. So if you're thinking, you know, during the day, I think that's still there. You're thinking during the day, just check with our tech dude. But you think during the day, oh, I feel like pizza tonight. But, you know, you can order it during the afternoon and schedule for delivery that night.
That's really good.
We'll pull it through. Yeah, so the opening hours.
Insert big pizza name here doesn't do that.
Oh, there you go.
See, one up already.
Insert big pizza name only gives you one choice too.
What are the plans for expansion? Obviously, the snowball is starting to roll down the hill and gather a bit of momentum.
Yeah, I'd like to expand to all the really exotic places in Australia, so I have an excuse to go out and spend time there.
Absolutely. You need the tax deduction holiday and going up to Cairns to sell it or something like that.
I'm sure
they have a need for this sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, there is plans, as Will was saying before. We really want to sort of give it a good stranglehold in the market in Melbourne. And you know, Melbourne's a bit of a test, if you
just
like, for us.
Just bed it down here.
Yeah, and just...
any food-related endeavour, Melbourne's a good place to start, isn't it?
It is a fantastic place to start when you look at it. And, you know, this is the sort of business that, you know, would run really successfully just out of Melbourne. But, you know, it's something that we want to take out to the rest of Australia as well.
It's truly got a global application if you look at it, because there's nothing like this. When I was in the United States a couple of months back, there's, you know, in the heart of Silicon Valley, there's nothing like this. So, but they've got rubbishy pizzas. Sorry, guys. They're all pepperoni, let me tell you. So how's the take-up been? Obviously, not from a restaurant point of view, but from a consumer point of view. It's a new mindset for a lot of consumers, and you've got to get over the fact that, oh, I've got their phone number preset in my mobile, or I've got the menu in the glove box of the car, will order it on the way home. Have you had any... Has it been lived up to your expectations, I guess, in new uptake?
Yeah, look, obviously, we've been running for a few weeks now, and for us, it's been a lot of a test period, a lot of live testing, until we really push in that marketing program. From the customers that have ordered, they've really enjoyed it, and we're getting a lot of people just going through out of curiosity and having a look. You know, the visitors to the site have really picked up since we've launched and started putting a bit of marketing out there. So, and slowly as we go, the orders are picking up more and more as people get their head around, you know, what's involved with it. I mean, as you said, it's a whole new concept, and it's a lot different to just picking up the phone and reading the menu. So,
but I like it because it gives you choice. Yeah. As a consumer, we all like to be able to go, what do you feel like tonight? And if your house is like my house, we tend to argue for the first 15 minutes about what we're going to eat, whether it be Indian pizza, Italian part, whatever. And it gives you that level of choice where you can argue more.
Now, I just did something interesting. There's a thing up in the top corner of the site that says questions, ask customer service. I clicked on that. What happens when you click on that link?
Well, it depends whether we have somebody in staff there.
We'll get a text.
If we got someone on staff there, then there'll be somebody there you can actually talk to. Otherwise, you'll just be able to leave a message and we'll get back to you as soon as we can.
But at least part of the time, there'll be someone there and you can have a real-time interchange with them and find out, oh, I've got this question, and you can find the answer.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
Look, I think it's a wonderful idea, and I think it's going to roll out. I just feel it, that once people start getting used to online ordering, and let's face it, I think it's more a Gen Y-ish thing, a younger person thing, because we use social networks. Where's your social networking? You know, I like this, tweet me, and do all that sort of stuff in the top. It is there? Good.
Yeah, if you go to the front page of takeout.com.au, what we encourage is people to jump on our Facebook page and like it. I think we've got over 350 fans at the moment.
That's good.
So, look, we really want to grow that. And it's a great way if you get on there. That's where we can keep you updated on when the iPhone app comes out and when the iPhone app pays for the Android app, which pays for the Windows app.
That's just it. You need cash flow, don't you, to do all these sort of things?
Well, jump on the Facebook site, become a fan, also jump on Twitter. We're on Twitter.
And presumably, if someone gets a really good meal, they can tweet about it, and someone else might go and find that same restaurant through your site.
Absolutely. Put a link to the site, to the restaurant there. The other option is you can also jump on, get into your account, and leave a review of the restaurant.
Well, that does reviews as well.
On the top right.
Oh, yeah.
You do radio.
Share your food experience.
Lots of finger pointing going on here in the studio.
That's very prominent on the right hand side of the front page. Yeah.
Yeah, you'll see a few reviews already there. And.
Here we go. Good. So, all right. Look at that.
So it helps you make an educated choice. But obviously, as time goes on, that'll build up as well.
Yep. No, it's very good.
All right, so we'll have to try it out, I think, one night in the Tech Talk. We tend to eat before we come on air. It's not a good idea talking on air, but we'll try it out one night. Tim, thank you very much for coming in and sharing your new website with us. I think it's got a lot of promise. I'm going to give
Definitely.
It a whirl. I'm in the old habit. I dial on the phone on the way home in the car. I've got to buck that habit. And once I've done that, I think I'll be good.
Just order it from the office before you leave. It'll be there to get home.
Well, I need the app on the phone. See, get the apps happening. I'm sure it'll be so much.
If you become a fan on Facebook, you can keep up to date on when the app comes out.
I don't have a Facebook account. I'm sorry.
Twitter.
No worries.
Thanks, Will, for coming in as well and telling us about the techo details on the back end.
Yeah, thanks, Will. That's good. Good luck with it all. Hopefully, it withstands the test of technological time because things change at a rapid rate. And he's hoping that you get a lot of fantastic restaurants on board. So it just, embellishes the choice that we have in this wonderful city of Melbourne. And watch out if you're listening to us in Cairns or Western Australia or New South Wales, wherever you might be listening to us around the place, it might come to your place real soon. Send the guys an email. Just jump on there and have a chat to Will and say, we want it in wherever you are. That'd be really good. Thanks, guys, for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Now, let's talk about Freeview.
Hey, someone just joined the wave.
They're the people I want to avoid the calls from.
Comes in very handy, especially when your files get really, really big and corruption takes place.
So you're an A.
Dude, it's not even a beta. It's just for us to play around with.
They also cited taxes and freight costs.
Just mount it on your desktop and run it direct. It's a big risk.
Oh, you watch the webcam.
Yeah.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio. You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
Wasn't that good? I think we should order some takeout. Don't you think they're great?
Yeah,
great.
Definitely.
I think it's a great idea. A lot of people asking questions in the chat at the moment. The URL was takeout.com.au. Which is...
I've just dropped it in there again.
Oh, is that what you did? Okay, very good. And the iPhone app will be becoming before the Android app. And
for purely commercial reasons.
Very cool. I'm going to try it out tomorrow. Brad, let us know how you go. That'd be really good. I'm going to try it out very shortly too. As I say to the guys, just a creature of habit, really. Got to get into the new way of ordering things. So,
but yeah, good way to get... good food, I suspect.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you very much to the boys for coming into this evening and telling us all about it. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McCall, I'm in this evening with Graham. Dr. Ron is predisposed, and JD had a better offer in the form of a board meeting this evening. But rest assured, they will return in the not-too-distant future, next week, all going according
hopefully.
To plan, hopefully. Yep. Yeah. All right. In the UK, there's been some arrests. 9 people, in fact, over a $2 million SIM rort. UK authorities have arrested these people with a mobile phone and SIM crime syndicate, which used the cards to siphon off millions of dollars from Telefonica's UK mobile phone brand O2. The City of London police said that the group pulled off its heist by using purchased SIM cards to dial premium internet phone lines, some of which cost $17 a minute. My goodness me. The group's outbound calls had never reached fever pitch by the time it was axed, calling the premium numbers 24/7. That's a nasty thing to do.
Extraordinary.
Yeah. Anyway, so just watch out. Keep your phone handy. And in Australia too, you can now block your number to premium services on most ISPs. Most telecommunications companies, phone companies will let you do that.
Yes, they will.
Head off to their website and you'll probably find that when you log in, and as you should all do, you might even be able to do it from your phone. You can block calls to and from your device.
And premium SMSs as well. So
yeah, now you had an issue with premium SMSs.
I certainly did.
Whatever happened to that? Did that ever resolve itself? You'll have to refresh the view and my memory for that matter.
After several tries, Telstra eventually admitted that it was a problem. And that they knew, and that they,
so the first thing they offered you half off, and you said no.
Yep, I
standard Telstra line.
I told them what they could do with that offer.
Yep.
So, when it happened again the following month, they said yes, we know about this this scam now. So it took them about a month to catch up with the fact that it was a scam, or there was something desperately wrong with this this service, and it was signing up people that had no association with it. And from then on, they were. It was just a case of whenever the bill came in to ring up and say, take these off again.
I think Adam Turner...
But they did eventually block my number for premium services, so...
Could you do it on the website, or was it... You had to ring them specifically and ask them?
I don't know whether you could have done it from the website. I did it all by ringing and asking, yeah.
Yeah. I know with Three you can do it on the website.
I haven't had much success... I can't seem to log into the Telstra website to get my bill either for some reason. It just doesn't work. It says I'm supposed to be able to do it, but whenever I try, I end up going round and round in circles. It prompts me for a certificate, which I haven't got, and then it says, do this, do that, and you end up back at the page you started on.
That's very frustrating, isn't it?
It is.
I know what you mean. It's happened. I must admit, I haven't had any issues with their website, but Telstra billing traditionally has a great deal of perplexity associated with it in just reading the bills, not to mention connecting to it and trying to work out what it is. Mm. And then when they went online, you could get a page at a time, like show your summary or show your call data or show this or show that. You've never seen this because you've never logged in, have
well,
you?
Well, I have. I was an early... I think my problem is that I was an early adopter.
Yeah.
And I used this service way back in, around about the year 2000 or so.
Have you ever tried calling them and getting them to reset it?
No, I haven't, because whenever I try to do it, it's sort of late at night and I'm trying to do stuff online.
Careful, they'll reset your phone service. You'll probably find you lose all your internet and they say, oh, you didn't want to reset your bill? Sorry,
so,
but this, that's what...
Yeah, when I originally signed up, you had to go through this whole rigmarole and an actual cryptography certificate, a personal certificate that they sent out to you. And, of course, that's long since been lost on a floppy disk somewhere on four computers ago.
The ATO tried that too with business portal stuff, but I think they've seen the light and they've come back down to SSL and normal user logins.
I think that's where my problem lies, though.
Ardwich on our chat saying block your number, premium services. Yes, totally agree.
Yeah.
The other thing I was about to allude to earlier, I think Adam Turner had an issue where he bought a data card. You know how you get your data, those little dongly SIM sticky things that you buy from telcos. Traditionally, they use the recycled numbers or numbers that are no longer applicable.
Oh, yes.
Because someone's cancelled a service or something.
So I've heard about this, and sometimes they're already pre-subscribed to some premium SMS services.
Because the premium SMSs are nothing to do with the telephone companies, you find that you end up getting a recycled phone number on your mobile data card, and next thing you know, you're getting all these bills for premium calls. So it probably
either sent or received an SMS on it because it's in your data modem.
Exactly. So it probably pays to, when you do sign up or pop into your local shop to get a data card, ensure that the number, if it is recycled, and chances are it is, and they probably can't tell you, but just make sure that premium SMSs are blocked because, like everything in this country, you have to ask for it.
That's a good tip.
So, interesting stuff. Now, Telstra looks to remote workers, 24/7 call centres. They're going to go offshore, which is probably not surprising. And they have confirmed that many of the staff for its new 24-hour call centre will work remotely from home, maybe, shifting its current arrangement using dedicated facilities. Everyone else is moving offshore. What's going on? Telstra announced plans to start offering 24/7 phone support from September the 14th.
Oh, you mean like they used to in the old days?
Well,
and
maybe.
And then they took it away from us.
They
and
did.
Now they're giving it back to us again and making a big deal of it.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
Telstra, isn't it?
It's yes.
Thanks, Telstra.
Now you mention it.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried ringing 13 22 00 outside of hours and it says call back during business hours or something? You can get faults and you can get that sort of stuff, mobiles, but not fixed or...
You used to be able to ring the mobile one. Was it 125 111 or something?
Anyway, yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Telstra
amount used to be really good before they cut the hours back and all the rest of it.
Well, that's the price of change, isn't it?
Mm.
Telstra announced plans to start offering 24/7 phone support from September the 14th, which ain't too far away, when it said it would spend tens of millions in doing so. The strategic the strategy is designed to bolster profits by stopping customers defecting. Oh, really? Why would they do that?
Mm.
But the company has not previously offered much detail on how it will resource the new arrangements. During its results briefing, CEO David Thodey said that the service was likely to involve both offshore and onshore call centres.
Yes.
Remote stuff. Anyway, so maybe that there was, I think we played on Tech Talk Radio a few years ago, the Indian call centre. Hello, Telstra, how may I be helping you?
Yes.
Maybe that will come to fruition very shortly. Not that there's anything wrong with offshore call centres. It's just traditionally they don't know much about our local terrain or suburbs. You know, you go, where are you? I'm in Melbourne. Oh, where's that?
What state's that in? Yes.
Not for any particular reason, but like, you know, my topography of certain Asian countries is probably not too flash either. So I'm not having a go. It's just the nature of the beast. Yes. All right.
Taking calls from home is an interesting idea. You can see that.
Just what you want. Telemarketing at home. I'm going to work from home today, guys. Just plug me in.
Yeah.
Phone wouldn't stop ringing.
And, that you'd get them answering while they were cooking their dinner or watching the footy or, yes.
Yeah, Warlock knows exactly what I'm talking about. Prawns in your modem. That's correct. That was very funny. We'll have to drag that out and play that again very shortly. UK ISPs to notify malware victims. Now, this is a good idea. UK internet service provider Virgin Media has announced it would begin notifying customers when they have been infected by malware. The ISP will contact customers by mail. That doesn't say whether it's email or snail mail, pointing them to a free security check and its own malware removal service. I'd be tipping it'll be by snail mail if they want to have any form of credibility.
Possibly.
But yes, it's probably a valid argument because your ISP is probably going to know before you do if you've got malware involved, especially if your machine turns into a zombie and starts sending out bots, sending out emails and spamming
exactly
things.
Exactly right. Yeah, this is
a ferocious rate. They'll go, there's something wrong with Graham's computer. Stop him or slow him down or send him an email or something.
Yeah, and certainly some ISPs here do take action if they notice that you're sending out a huge flood of emails like that. They will put restrictions on your outgoing emails and stop you from being able to send them. So
I think some ISPs do that already.
I've been involved in situations where that's happened.
The way they test it is if you do a BCC and put a lot of people in there, like your whole group of friends or something like that, and it says, too many recipients, and it sends none.
But I've had situations where a customer of mine has had a machine get infected with spyware, and it's been sending out volumes and volumes of spam to all and sundry, and the ISP has actually blocked all outgoing mail for that connection.
Oh, well, that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, it's a very good thing, but they've also provided a way around so that if you use authentication to send mail, so SMTP auth, if people are familiar with that, that just means that you need a username and password when you send your emails, that allows them through, whereas the ones that are sent from the infected machine don't get through. So it's worked, although it's been a frustration for my customers because they had to go and set up the authentication thing, or in these cases get me to do it for them. The result has actually been good in that the spam has not made it, or a lot of the spam has not made it out into the real world.
That's good. Well, Virgin Media, this company in the UK that's planning on doing this, has estimated that 25% of its complaints relate to speed are caused by malware. So you can just imagine their call centers ringing up saying, why is my
internet
slow down?
Why is my connection so slow? Because, yeah, you've got
check the light. Is it flashing frequently?
Yeah, because you've got junk on your machine that's trying to send out stuff to the whole world, yeah.
Anyway, these guys have basically had enough. When I say these guys, Virgin Media, and their malware education initiative follows reports that the Zeus version 3 Trojan was responsible for the loss of £675,000 from online customers of one UK bank. So obviously there's bots and things out there doing that sort of stuff. So yeah, I think it's a good initiative. I can't see that happening here in the short term, but you never know. Big Pond in itself is so big that it's just remember a couple of years back with Big Pond and they'd lose mail. It took 4 days to get mail delivered and things like that. That's the things that stick in your mind about tragic days of telecommunications and things like that. So
yeah, their mail system just got completely overwhelmed for a while there until they beefed it up a bit.
All right, let's talk about Optus for a moment and the word unlimited. We've spoken about this before.
What have they done now?
Well, it's not what they've done. It's they want to have, we'll put it this way. Optus has amended advertisements for its unlimited internet and phone bundles, but will pursue a federal court declaration that unlimited in the context of the internet wasn't understood by customers to refer to the speed of a connection. The telco had previously marked an unlimited home phone and broadband bundle that included 50 gig of super fast broadband that was then throttled to a speed of 256 kilobits per second. Anyway, the ACCC, which is the Australian Consumer and Competition Commission, or Consumer Commission, should I say, took action against Optus over its advertising of the plans in June. So, and I think we discussed it around June as well, is if the definition of unlimited, according to the dictionary, as far as I was aware, was without limits or no limitations. And of course,
So all they need to do to fix the problem is to say unlimited speeds or unlimited downloads, or to put the qualification on what it is that's unlimited.
Yes. It's like the word free. Free infers at no cost. But when you pay for a handset in the plan, then it's
but
not free.
But free can also infer without sensor.
Yes, it could. What are you talking? Where are you alluding to there, Graham?
Well, no, I'm just saying it's a different meaning of the word free. You've got to interpret...
Like free internet.
You've got to interpret... Yes, you've got to interpret... You could talk about a free internet where you pay for your internet connection, but you're allowed to do with it whatever you like. That could be called free as well. Do you see what I mean?
Yes, I do.
So you've got to use these terms in some sort of context. So, yeah, Optus's solution should be to say unlimited speed rather than just unlimited.
Mm. Yes, a bit more definition would be good. During the course of the week, I had cause to use my, or should I say, I had an alarm system installed in the new office. Because, as you know, the Tech Talk offices have moved to a new palatial address. And we had the security system come in, and the security guys come in and put in a system the other day. Now, as a consumer, Graham, have you ever had cause to not be happy with an installation and get on the phone or email and give someone a serve
with a security system?
Yeah.
No, I haven't, I have to say.
Yeah. Well, I must admit, I think I got the raw end of the stick the other day. I'm going to tell you a little story here, which is what happened to me last week. But
this is Andrew's therapy session, ladies and gentlemen. Just
thank you, Graham. But look, as a consumer, you need to stand up. If something doesn't look right or it smells bad, get them back in and fix the goodness for gracious things. Now, I had an instance during the course of the week with Chubb. Now, Chubb are a very reputable company, and they still are. And in my eyes, they are. They fix the problem amazingly. But what I would say to you is,
In Melbourne, Chubb do like the back office monitoring for basically all the security companies. So you get out Joe Blow's, you know, security and alarm company to install an alarm, and they have it monitored back to base.
Yep.
The base is provided by Chubb.
Yeah, even the installation these days, or this particular company. Now, Chubb did a fantastic job, and I would recommend them beautifully for what they did, because I sent an email off. This guy came out, he installed it, and he did, you know, one of those bad install jobs, a few extra holes that you get.
Yeah.
Things not quite in the right place, and you go, oh, where did that eyesore come from? Now,
Peter Garrett knows about those sorts of people with installation.
Maybe that's where he used to work. But on the way out the door, when I sort of voiced my dislike for his installation, he said, oh, it's my last day with the organisation. I've gone, oh, that explains a lot of things. Oh,
no.
Anyway, after I sent an email off, to Chubb's credit, because they're such a reputable company, they came out, they fixed the problem.
They sent a bloke round to fix it?
And the general manager came out and said g'day and apologised.
Oh, there you go.
So you can't go better than customer service like that.
That is good.
They did it better than and with an organised...
Because that's a moment where a company can either get a customer loyal for life or lose them forever.
Yep. It's
and
that
if
level
they
of service.
Fix a problem like that, yeah.
So what I'm saying, everyone out there, is if you do get a dodgy install, it might not work with some of the really big telcos. They don't seem to have any form of anyway. But the smaller, bigger companies, if that makes sense, it is worth having a chat to them about it, because you're only as good as your last job. Mm. I know with what I do, if I made a dodgy thing, it's the last time I'm going to be doing that sort of stuff, because word spreads, doesn't it, Graham?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Anyway, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. Bit of a tech vent there.
Do you feel better?
Yeah, I do, actually.
That's good.
It's good. Dr. Ron is tonight. It's very... He'd have something to say about that.
He would.
He's listening to us on the stream at the moment. Good evening, Dr. Ron. He's not far from here. So, yeah, anyway, he's just otherwise disposed. I think I was reading the chat earlier on this evening, too. The boys were saying...
They've gone way off on a tangent here now, though.
There's a new version of Android coming out, just because we were talking about it. It's called Honeycomb. maybe.
And that's right. I've heard about this. Yes.
There's speculation whether it'll be 3.1 or 3.2. So Froyo, frozen yogurt, is not long for the world. They're going to have a bit of honeycomb. It's going to be a very tasty little photographic session when you go over to Mountain View next time and see all these great things that are sitting there.
Mm.
So,
I'll just hold off getting a smartphone and see if honeycomb looks good.
No, it upgrades. It does it all by itself.
Does it?
It just happens in the background. Except if... See, Dr. Ron was a trailblazer because he got the first Google phone. Remember?
Yeah, he did, yes.
Now, he's had that for 2 years, and it's now got to a point where he can't upgrade it any further because I just.
But he still talks excitedly about how good it is.
He does.
Yeah.
But it is a very good device.
The old Android evangelist in the foyer after the show every week. He's.
Absolutely. But anyway, it's one of those things, really, where he needs to do the hardware upgrade to take advantage of the new things. Like when Windows 7 and all those things came along, you sort of needed to go the next. You know,
yeah,
do the
up,
do
it
the
works
hardware
a lot better
upgrade.
on a new computer than it does trying to upgrade an old one. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
same
anyway,
with the phone.
Google is set to call the next version of its operating system Honeycomb, following the tablet-friendly Gingerbread platform, which was also another word that was bandied around on our chat this evening. Multiple sources have confirmed to several publications that the next version will be called Honeycomb, although details of what this upgrade will bring are still very sketchy. It's likely that it will be more of an incremental upgrade in the same manner that Android 2.2 or Froyo was to Android 2.1, Eclair, as Google seeks to perfect the new platform on tablets and high-end smartphones. So there's tablets. There's all sorts of offerings in the wind. And, of course, you got to remember what Android was. It's supposed to be a lightweight OS for all sorts of, you know, smartphone-y sort of things. So, yeah. Any further, you're really feeling that you need to get one of these devices to run Android there?
I'm certain I will sooner or later, yeah.
Sooner or later?
Yeah.
Okay. That's sitting on the fence in my book.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should run for election.
Yeah.
You're good. You could do that.
That's been suggested too.
Now, in the UK, those people who live in London, now, we normally have a regular UK listener in the chat. Who,
Darren, isn't it?
Darren, who's not there tonight. Maybe he's had a better offer in the UK. Maybe the sun's shining. He's gone outside to sun himself or something.
Mm.
But the UK e-sales have hit a three-year high in July.
E-sales.
These POMs are actually spending more and more money online, and it's probably a trend in Australia too, of people buying and shopping online. I must admit, I do where I can. But in the UK, shoppers spent a whopping $5 billion online in July, a rise of 18% on the same time in 2009. $5 billion. They've got a lot of people there, a lot more than we have.
Yeah, but
they've got the population of Australia in London.
Well, it's summer in the UK, of course, at the moment. It's obviously it's going to be too rainy to go outside.
I bought my Android online.
They're going to be inside, sitting on the internet, looking for something to do. So they're probably ordering things.
Yeah. That's the theory, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go with that.
It's too rainy in summer to go outside.
But I think a lot of things these days people buy online, regardless of, you know, the touchy-feely things like a couch or a whatever. You probably need to go and sit in a sofa in a shop to get the hang of it. But like I bought my the HTC device online, bought on eBay. So, you know.
Well, that's one way to do it, yeah.
It was so much cheaper than going into a shop and buying it. It was just, and I don't think you could probably buy. Well, you probably could. You just have to hunt around for it.
Well, it's an interesting thing. And
do you shop much online?
I do a little bit. Yeah, I find it's very convenient. I mean, and often for funny little things. So I might have had a look in the shops that I frequently go to and not found it. And you find it so easily online sometimes, and you can find a little company that'll just accept your credit card and send it out to you in a post pack and. It arrives a few days later. I bought some my little torch that I carry around with me. I bought some globes for it recently online, because it was just too inconvenient to go and find a shop that stocks the things, and they're a little bit obscure.
I'd rather shop online, pay the $4 or $5 for the postage. You can't. Time's not worth it. By
that's
the time
right.
You drive
and
pick it
just,
up, and
they just turned up in a couple of days, and it was brilliant. It was just far too easy to do any other way. But it is a bit of a. It's something in Australia that we're not quite as used to. In America, they've had a long, long history of postal orders through these catalogs that certain catalog companies will send out every year or every quarter, or I don't know how frequently they come out. These huge catalogs of devices, and people just write off and order in what they need from that. And it's a thing that Americans have been very used to doing for decades and decades. And so that translates to buying online very easily. Whereas in Australia, and I think in the UK as well, we haven't quite got that postal order mentality that that a lot of Americans have got. So it's a little bit more of a step for us to get from, you know, we used to go into a shop and buy it, now we're going to order it online. But more and more people are going there and finding it's a very useful experience.
We're even starting to see products come out now with small dollar credit limits for young people to buy stuff online too, like a $20 maximum transaction. You know, those sort of cards are starting to come out. But getting back to our UK sales,
say you can buy your music online or stuff
exactly.
like that. Yeah, that's a good idea.
You know, mum and dads can give the kids a $20 credit card or a card. I'm assuming it might even be a debit card or something which they can use online. Chances are you're not going to lose much if something goes wayward with it. So. In the UK, you're right about the weather, Graham. The bad weather encouraged shoppers to avoid the high street, benefiting all the businesses with online stores. And the other thing that was really went gangbusters is the travel. The travel sector, 32% increase on the previous month. Obviously, they all wanted to get out of England and go to Malta or somewhere, so or Barcelona or somewhere like
that. But again, this is something you can do really well online. You book your airfares online, you book your hotels online, then you can save a mozza over booking it through the old-fashioned way.
I book all my travel online.
I'm not surprised.
I can't even think the last time that I even went into a travel agent. Like, you just wonder how these guys hang in there.
The airlines charge you a premium. If you ring up and talk to a customer service person,
they charge you more for
doing that.
Don't talk too loud. The banks will do it, surely.
You book it online and, I've done it. I don't travel a lot on the airlines and... those who've seen me on the webcam or who know me, they know I'm a big person. I'm much. I take up much more space than your average person, and yet, I found that I've been really well treated by a particular airline, and I've booked online every time, and they've treated me very well.
Oh, way to go!
So,
all right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the home stretch now. Odd Spot Gadget and Website of the Week coming up after this.
Suffering succotash. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
Remember when Tech Talk Radio first hit the airwaves some 5-odd years ago? Listeners could ring up and say their bit. Remember that? Well, it's back.
The Tech Talk Radio feedback line has risen from the ashes. So if you have a comment, criticism, correction, or you just plain want to get it off your chest, then start dialing 03-8682-8836. The Tech Talk Radio feedback line is your direct line to being heard by millions of Tech Talk listeners around the planet. So get dialing 03-8682-8836. That's 03-8682-8836. Call now.
But we've run out of steak knives.
I'm not sure that they're driving competition out of the whole marketplace.
Well, no, they won't take a definitive stance on that either.
You don't win elections, you lose them.
Who's in the limelight for all the wrong reasons is the question.
Oh, but it's great. That's outside Australia.
Lots of girls on the floor there doing development.
Flash is available for free, and I can develop on it for free, can I?
No.
Most modern name servers dealt with that without even blinking.
Entertaining.
That's very hard to do when it's...
it really is hard to simulate it.
Informative.
It's a glorified phone, but it's...
Independent.
That's their own stupidity.
That's exactly right.
I agree.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
See, there's some things you just got to do on...
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. Interesting.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my own.
Logitech have announced a new wireless headset, the model H760, offering up to 6 hours battery life. It's billed as a comfortable wireless entertainment device, lets you move up to 40 feet, that's 12 metres for those of you who grew up when I did, away from your computer. Newest headset gives you the freedom to roam when you're connecting with your co-workers or loved ones, or when you just want to be entertained. So it's headphones with a microphone attached.
That's
completely
a good
cordless.
Good idea, isn't it?
I think it's a great idea. Plug and play, easy to set up, easy to wear. Built-in quick access audio controls for just volume, pause and navigate your playlist, and a noise-cancelling microphone for when you're Skyping or VoIPing or whatever else it is you do on your...
If you haven't got your Bluetooth earpiece in, you can have one of these
Yeah. So
don't seem to have any pricing on it yet. That's a bit so new, isn't it, watch for it coming soon. The Logitech Wireless Headset H760.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Now, I've got one for you, Graham. I don't know whether you've ever played around with these things called QR codes, but let me tell you, they're going to be fairly big in the next little bit. For those of you who aren't familiar with them, they're these funny little, they look like three-dimensional barcodes. They're sort of like got squares. They're very pretty.
I've seen, they're really strange-looking things, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I don't know whether you've actually ever played around with them yet, but once you get your own smartphone, you'll probably find that you'll have a barcode reader.
No, my Nokia E70, whatever it is, E51 can do it.
Okay, well, what we'll do, not right now, but when we're off air later on this evening, is probably do what others will do. You can go and generate a QR code. Now, these things are a bit of fun to play with. You can generate SMSs, mail tos, web URLs,
now,
links,
given this
videos.
Is the website of the week. I'm guessing you've got a website we can do this.
I do, says he, holding up my piece of paper so I can read it in front of me. It's http://deliver, spelt deliver.com/QR-code-generator. It's pretty simple. So deliver.com/QR-code-generator. Now, if you go there, you'll probably find that you can generate your own QR code. You can put a URL in for your favourite website or a link to your page or a phone number, anything like that, an email address. So you can actually publish something graphical on a website because you can take a picture off a screen or you can print it onto an object. You can do anything with it. So the world's going to be your oyster, I think, with QR codes in the next little bit. We're going to see a lot more of them come into our day-to-day use, especially with smartphones, because, you know, put on a bottle of wine, for example, put it on a record, or put it on anything you like.
I've seen it on advertising posters, so you can click on it to get a website to go for more information.
Exactly. You could do that. You could put it on the trailer poster that's on the bus stop and all that sort of stuff. So while you're sitting there, scan your QR code and away you go. I think they're a great idea. So have a look. Have a play with one if you've got a phone that can do it. Generate your own QR code. Start using them on your website or printing them on pieces of paper. Annoy people around
you. Put one
on
the back of your business card.
I was thinking you're doing that. I'm glad I didn't. But yes, you could. You put it on the side of your car. Imagine that, the pizza delivery guy. It doesn't say the pinky's name or whatever it is on there.
Oh,
you
have to.
You have to scan the code as it goes past. That'd be fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, moving right along. That's the Tech Talk Radio website of the week. Generate your own QR codes. deliver.com/QR/code/generator.
Dash.
Yeah, what he said.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
12 people at a face court in the UK accused of using stolen credit cards to buy their own songs on iTunes, according to police in the UK.
I'll do it.
The gang is alleged to have created about 20 songs and uploaded them to be sold on iTunes and Amazon.
You're kidding.
So it's not just iTunes, it's the Amazon Music as well.
It's quite a lot of money, really, isn't it?
Well,
write a crappy song, upload it, and buy it.
Apparently not, because the Scotland Yard will be straight onto you if you're in the UK. They're alleged to have stolen or cloned credit cards to buy songs worth £469,000. Now, for those of you who aren't up with the latest exchange rate, that's $818,000 Australian dollars.
Wow.
Sprung.
They got caught.
Their own songs. The raids took place in London, Birmingham, Wolverhampton and Kent, and 12 people are due to face court in Westminster Magistrates Court. Subjects were questioned by members of Scotland Yard's e-crime unit after the raids, and apparently there was some FBI assistance in tracking them down as well.
Absolutely.
An international effort, and yeah, massive.
So, moral of the story is don't nick credit cards and buy your own songs. Absolutely. And that's Tech Talk Radio for this week. Thank you very much to all those listening. Thanks for joining in this evening. Thank you also to Tim Sincotta and Will Cross for coming in and telling us all about takeout.com. Going
to
give that a whirl. Still the same time next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT, and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.